Hello, this is UU Todd Phillips, the Golden Voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. No, my life is not this precipitous hour through which you see me passing at a run. I stand before my background like a tree. Of all my many mouths, I am but one, and that which soonest chooses to be dumb. I am the rest between two notes, which, struck together, sound discordantly, because death's note would claim a higher key. But in that dark pause, trembling, the notes meet, harmonious, and the song continues sweet. Well, here we are again. This is me, UU Todd Phillips, a.k.a. Golden Voice of the Great Southwest. Steve Baker, of course, running the control board here. The music of the Borsdorfs, as usual. They've moved someplace else, and I wish I could find out where, because I'd like to be in touch with them. The poem I just read was from Rilke, This Precipitous Hour. We are here in the studios of KVMR Community Radio, where the sign on the door says, Warning, Hazardous Material. And, of course, downtown metropolitan Nevada City, California. Nevada City, California, unique city in the foothills of the Sierra. The only city in California where the children in grade school, when they have to go to the bathroom, can raise up to five fingers. Now, you grapple with that one. We've just passed St. Patrick's Day here. In Nevada City. I know I'm not supposed to do time-specific things, but what the hell, it was St. Patrick's Day, and I am in real time right here, wherever you are. I don't participate in the revelry at St. Patrick's Day very much, but I do have two magnetic signs, which I affix to the side of my car. They say taxi, and I park across the street from McGee's Bar, and I watch a few good fights and pick up a few extra dollars. Excuse me. Well, now, this is my rant day. As I've said before, and probably too often, I have no rant control. There's a few things I feel like ranting into, sort of dealing the cinders in the stew, as Woody Guthrie said. Well, where to begin? Let's see. Rant number one. I was over in Japan cruising the Ginza on R&R, down from Kumari Gap in Korea when I was a soldier. I walked up and down the Ginza, and all I heard was American music. Certainly there were Japanese bands, Japanese orchestras, and they were playing very well. They were good musicians, but it was all American music. I was interested in Kodo music. I wanted to hear Samisen music. And, you know, I couldn't find it. Some young friends just came back from northern Thailand, where they were working with the Peace Corps. They were very interested in finding. They went out and deliberately sought traditional Thai music. The little tea houses they went into had boom boxes that were blaring the Rolling Stones. Well, that's called cultural imperialism, and I've been privy to cultural imperialism a good part of my life since I first encountered it over there in Korea and in Japan. I don't want to be too snotty about this, but every time I listen to world music, what they call world music, what I hear is music from other cultures, especially third world cultures, gradually caving in to Eurocentric musical values, gradually caving into more and more electricity, more and more bottom, as the music continues to be increasingly driven by the electric bass. Now, I know that there's always exchange between cultures, musical exchanges between cultures, and that's very, very healthy. One enriches the other, hopefully. It's just that the exchange appears to me to be increasingly out of balance. Well, now, of course, there's a backlash to that, and I'm going to play one of those backlashes that was sent along to me by Joseph Stevenson in Astoria, Oregon, who listens to us on KMUN. He sent me a whole bunch of material from Australia. He'd been down there street singing. Joseph, I've lost your address. Would you please send it to me? I need it, and I'm I'd like to be back in touch with you and trade you something for that wonderful tape full of Australian music. In any case, this is an anonymous Bush band, and pay attention, this is a field recording from some club somewhere in way out back of Australia. Anonymous Bush band, No American Music.
Now it seems to me that all they play these days on radio are disco tunes and rock and roll. Well, it's music we don't know. And they sing songs of America in accent smooth and sleek. Well, our songs, they're Australian, and we sing the way we speak. We don't play American music, and we don't sing American songs. We'll sing all the Bush or Sydney Bush. We'll even sing about Geelong. We'll sing about the old time shearers and the wallaby tracks now gone. But we won't play American music, and we won't sing American songs. Now in some parts of the outback, they're singing country songs, and they sing about Australia, but there must be something wrong, 'cause the tunes all sound as if they come from Nashville, Tennessee. It's where the singers were all born, near Washington, D.C. Well, we don't play American music, and we don't sing American songs. We'll sing on the Bush or Sydney Bush. We'll even sing about Geelong. We'll sing about the old-time shearers and the wallaby tracks now gone. But we won't play American music, and we won't sing American songs. Well, we may be out of fashion, and we may be out of touch. We may not make the hit parade, don't fancy our chances much, 'cause we don't sing songs like Galveston or Rocky Mountain High. Well, you can keep your West Virginia, mate, we'll settle for Gundagai. 'Cause we don't play American music, and we don't sing American songs. We'll sing on the Bush or Sydney Bush, we'll even sing about Geelong. We'll sing about the old time shearers and the wallaby tracks now gone. But we won't play American music, and we won't sing American songs. No, we won't play American music, and we won't sing American songs. We'll sing on the Bush or Sydney Bush, we'll even sing about Geelong. We'll sing about the old time shearers and the wallaby tracks now gone. But we won't play American music, and we won't sing American. Blimey, here we go again, won't sing American songs.
Isn't that a gas? Well, like I say, backlash. Oh, there's so much good music out there, and I'm glad that people are sending that along to me. As long as I'm not able to travel as much as I used to, where I would normally encounter the music and bring it home with me, folks are finally figuring out what I'm up to and gradually sending in things that they feel like I can use and put out over the people's airwaves. It would probably not be heard any other place. Community radio. Isn't community radio magnificent? It's a wonderful, wonderful experience to have that much control over the people's airwaves, over one of our major national resources, which is in danger of constantly drifting away from us or being taken from our hands. I was so particularly proud of our community station here, KVMR, Nevada City, for broadcasting Live Wire, which was, it lasted for a month. It was a new independent daily news journal syndicated through the whole community radio network. Well, it was independent news programming called Live Wire and produced by the National Radio Project. We've been beginning more and more to control our media and to coordinate and network our media, like the independent media centers at WTO demonstration or in Los Angeles for the Democratic National Convention. It's a wonderful, it's a part of a much larger movement. There's a tremendous movement growing in this country. Can you feel it? Can you hear it? A lot of it centered on young America, on youth, who are just simply pissed off down to their socks about the way things are going. And we're all in it together. Well, Live Wire is certainly a marvelous addition to that. The news program pilot was being produced and tested as part of an ongoing national dialogue. Now, that lasted for a month. Now, the Live Wire, the National Radio Project, want people who have been listening to it and people who feel strongly about alternative media to get hold of them, to find out more about them, and to offer suggestions about how it can improve, what kind of news they would like to hear, what things aren't being covered that should be covered. Go ahead and get hold of them at www.radioproject.org. That's the National Radio Project Live Wire, and that's your news update on the People's Media. Meanwhile, it's a good time to play Ann Feeney and Look to the Left.
Looking for a place in the audio wasteland where music comes straight from the heart. MTV didn't make it for me. Worlds apart from that top 40 chart, fed up with flash pots and lasers, lip syncing losers only LA could find. I was resigned to go back to my vinyl. I was bereft, then I looked to the left. Oh, look to the left of your dial.
Pure hell. Just pure hell. How does she remember all those words, all those names? I couldn't possibly cram all those into my brain. That's why the songs I make up are so simple, because I can remember them for the most part. Speaking of pure hell, we just passed the 10th anniversary of the death of Judy Berry. Now, most people here in California know about Judy Berry, and people are involved in the radical environmental community, the direct action environmental community, of course, know Judy Berry very well. Judy Berry is the one whose car was blown up with her and Daryl Cherney in an effort to get rid of her. Why? Because, well, a lot of us think because she had finally stumbled onto the truth. And what was the truth that Judy Berry stumbled on? She came from a working class background, came from organizers in the East. Her parents, working class, I've said it before, and I will say it again, and I'll say it till everybody gets the point. The working class is anybody who works for wages and has a boss is in the working class. If all you're selling is your labor energy, you don't own the tools you work with, you don't own the workplace, all you're selling is your labor energy to get a boss and to get a paycheck, you're in the working class. Doesn't matter whether you're a college professor or a ditch digger. Now, Judy recognized that most of the environmentalists she was working with in Earth First and in other organizations were wage workers, were working jobs where they were getting wages where they had a boss. And, of course, the people working in the mills and working in the forest were also wage workers, you see. All of the members of the working class who have interests in common. But instead of acting on those common interests, we're acting against each other. Why? Because the boss's genius is to keep the working class divided. It always has been, you see. Her idea, the thing she started in the environmental movement, was building bridges in the working class instead of burning them, bringing the working class back together face to face, talking to itself. That's the truth, I think, that Judy Berry discovered, and the essential solidarity of the working class, and she was good at it, and she was being successful at it, and that's why I think they tried to blow her up. Judy could polemicize, she could rant, she could wave her arms, she could caterwaul. She was one of the best speakers I ever heard, but I never saw anybody laugh as much in my life. Although deep down in her middle, there was a great, great boiling cauldron of tightly compacted anger, which was the springboard for her activism. At the same time, there was a great home for an enormous joy, which I think she expressed. Well, okay, listen to this now. You're going to listen to Judy Berry talking about the origin of the scientific method. This is from one of her speeches outdoors. It's a good letter to speak for herself. Here's Judy Berry and Francis Bacon.
Anyone who's ever dealt with the Forest Service or the California Department of Forestry or Endangered Species Act or anything like that knows that the science is used as the authority for the kind of relentless assault on nature of this society. And science is presented to us as neutral, as an objective path to knowledge, as something that's value-free. But science is not value-free. The scientific methods, there's not just one method, despite what we were taught in science class. There's not just one method. And the methodology of Western science is not value-free at all. In fact, it was openly described by its founders as a masculine system that presupposes the separation of people from nature and presupposes our dominance over nature. And I want to give you some quotes to let you know why this is so. This going back to the origin of the scientific method and all those things way back in the 1600s in the Renaissance period. And first of all, one of the initiation of the scientific method, the elevation of this as absolute truth and the only path to truth, this was begun in like 1664, for example. There was something that was called the Royal Society, and it was composed of all these scientific men who were developing these theories. And they described their goal, too, and this is a quote, to raise a masculine philosophy whereby the mind of men may be ennobled with the knowledge of solid truths. I'll give you another example. This is from the aptly named Sir Francis Bacon. he was one of the worst. He was actually pretty shocking. He said that the scientific method is a method of aggression. And here's his quote. The nature of things betrays itself more readily under vexation than in its natural freedom. Science is not merely a gentle guidance over nature's course. We have the power to conquer and subdue her, to shake her to her foundations. And that the purpose of doing this is to create a blessed race of heroes who would dominate both nature and society. So, you know, you don't go back to these philosophical roots of science very often, but this is the roots of the scientific method that's now approved by the CDF to justify their clear cuts. The rise of the scientific method, of this masculine method of knowledge, went along at the same time period with the very violent suppression of the women's knowledge, of the knowledge of the earth, of the herbal ways and things like that. So this wasn't just, oh, we have a better way, you women stand aside. It was, we're going to burn you at the stake. So, you know, it was certainly not neutral. It was a very aggressive imposition of a masculine system of knowledge. But in order to find a balance in this society is hugely out of balance. And in order to find that balance, we would have to see a huge rise of the feminine, both a rise of individual women and also a rise of feminist ideology among both women and men. But without this balance between the masculine and the feminine, society, I don't believe, we cannot make the changes that we need to come back into balance with the earth.
Judy Berry and the scientific method. Well, I guess she pretty well settled there, Hash. That's worth thinking about. All right, guys, worth thinking about. Get a grip on yourself. My wife, Joanna, assures me that the status quo means things stay the same. Well, in the present conservative political environment, I say, yeah, things stay the same, but more of it, more of the same is what it seems to me. Does that make sense? More of the same, let's see, in a world full of violence, the conservative solution is more violence. In a world full of pain, the solution is more pain. Just recently, in a world with too much carbon dioxide, the answer is more carbon dioxide. And then, of course, in a world with too many guns in it, the solution is more guns. Well, let's put policemen with guns in the schools. Or some people say, let's arm the teachers. If the teachers had guns, that wouldn't happen. I don't know. And then there are the signs, the bumper stickers that I see around town that guns don't shoot people, people shoot people. And I stop and think, well, baseball season is right upon us. And I say to myself, I guess bats don't hit home runs. Ball players hit home runs. Of course, you try to hit a home run without a bat, it's going to be very difficult. It's a lot easier if you use a bat. Well, of course, it's a lot easier to kill somebody if you have a gun than in any other way. And of course, the more guns there are, the easier it is. A rubber duck could figure that out. Now, you've heard this one before, and I'm going to play it for you again because I want everybody to hear it. Dan Byrne, The Kid's Prayer.
So sad, so sad, the news come our way this morning. Like a bad dream, a dream that you'd never even speak of. In a school where we send our precious children. The one place of innocence the world might ever let them know. And barely aware of the odds against existence in the first place. Of love and fertility, of risk, of a baby being born. And of clothes and food and fear and maybe relocation. Of sickness, recovery, of music lessons, painting the garage. And lingering over eggs and thoughts and sleepy conversations. And plans for the weekend and one last pause to pet the dog. And a glance at the clock and the grabbing of the sandwich and the notebook. Confident of nothing but the unbroken days they've been granted. But comes a child so full of anger and hatred. Barely aware of the genesis coursing through his veins. With a gun, deaf and blind deliverer of madness. Skilled beyond his own unformulated brain. And with his hand in a fist and his soul in a knot and his heart racing. And his mind sick with images, his slim shoulders finally feeling tall. And his fellow creatures, students in their crushes and their daydreams. Struggling to unwrap the ancient secrets of geometry. He pulls from his coat the instrument to shatter all forevers. In a random blaze of insides and blood and endless now. And noise and flash and more, and not even when it's over. Can any so much as summon up the sanity to scream? And on the floor, his classmates blown down and choking. As he lays his weapon on his desk, partly sure he isn't dreaming. And all the world descends and offers up their condolence. And offers up their theories, what went wrong and who and why and when and how. It's all the killing day and night on television. It's all the movies where violence is as natural as breathing. It's guns and bullets as easily obtainable as candy. It's video games where you kill and begin to think it's real. It's people not having God in their lives anymore. Or it's all of it or none of it or some of it in various combinations. And all those theories, they sound pretty logical, I guess. Though I ain't no scientist, I ain't no dissector of statistics. I ain't no theologist, I ain't no psychologist or biologist. All I do is offer up a prayer of my own. Talk to your kids, play with your kids, tell them your dreams and your disappointments. Listen with your kids and listen to your kids. Watch your kids and let your kids watch you. Tell your kids the truth as best as you can tell it. No use telling lies, your kids can always smell it. Cook for your kids, have your kids cook for you. Sing with your kids, teach your kids the blues. Learn their games, teach them yours. Touch your kids, find out what they know. Be sad with your kids, be stupid with your kids. Laugh with your kids, cry with your kids. Be yourself with your kids, be real with your kids. Embarrass your kids, let them embarrass you. Be strong with your kids, be tough with your kids. Be firm with your kids, say no to your kids. Say yes to your kids, take it easy on your kids. You were a kid not so long ago. There's things you know your kids will never know. There's places they live where you will never go. So dance with your kids, paint with your kids, walk with your kids, tell stories to your kids. One day your kids won't be kids, and maybe they'll have kids of their own. Hope they talk to their kids, play with their kids, tell them their dreams and their disappointments.
Danny Hall playing, I think that was Beautiful Ohio Waltz. Isn't that a fine piece of work there by Dan Byrne? And of course, Kenny Hall, one of my favorite musicians. By the way, I've been apprised by Joan in the other room that the anniversary of, this was the fourth anniversary of Judy Berry's death, and it was actually last May, the 10th anniversary of her car getting blown up. Sometimes I feel timeless. I hope it stays that way. I read in the Chronicle, it's the San Francisco Chronicle, for those of you who are out there in Troy, New York, of the obituary of the death of S. Dillon Ripley. Now, S. Dillon Ripley and I have a kind of a bizarre connection. S. Dillon Ripley, for those of you who don't remember, was the head of the Smithsonian Institution for a great long time. He had his office in what was called the Castle, that big red sandstone building on the Mall in Washington. He was an ornithologist by training. I was awakened late one night by a cab driver banging on my door at the place I was staying in Washington, D.C. Joe Hickerson, who couldn't be there, the curator of the folk song archives at the Library of Congress, had sent the cab driver over to take me to a particular place. Well, I put my clothes on. It was the dead of night. He drove me down to the Hirshhorn Museum, rather to the sunken sculpture garden across the street from it. Nothing could be built above the level of the Mall, you see. And down there was a reflecting pond and a willow tree overhanging it, and underneath it was a small house. Well, the cab driver was instructed to tell me the following. S. Dillon Ripley, the ornithologist coming out of the castle, saw a brood of ducks there with the mother duck in the bushes. Day after day, as he came out, he saw that brood diminish, as the rats, who swarm in streams over the Mall at night to pick up the popcorn the tourists drop, were taking away the ducks, were stealing the ducklings. So he had that little house built there in the sculpture garden under the tree, and he had the ducks' family installed in that house, and an armed guard there at night with a pistol to shoot the rats to keep them away. Now, we are having a hell of a time trying to hang on to the wetlands for all of our wildfowl in their migratory paths, but that one damn duck has public housing and an armed guard. Oh, God, have we heard the last of the cry of the wild goose?
Ich will gehen, wo die Katschke geht, und I wanna drehen, wie a Katschke dreht. Weil Grußbrecher Fuß gestoppt der Hals, a Meichel im Beichel und a Gerl in Schmalz. Yesterday I went to the butcher shop to buy a chicken and a couple of chops. The butcher said that we got Katschke today. Die Katschke heute meine Geber geschrei. I wanna go where the wild goose goes, cause I know more than a wild goose knows. Mein Kopf zerquetscht und mein Pipi zerdrückt. It won't be long, I'll be abgeflickt. Cher said that it weighs 10 pounds. Oh, it's a beautiful Katschke, lady, a magnificent gun. $6, it's a material, lady, you'll buy it. Die Katschke cried, ach, Mones, I don't wanna live by it. Ich muss gehen, wo der Wild Goose muss, bevor der Scheuchert hackt er auf mein Nuss. Wild Goose, Bruder Goose, Rappa Cholatschke, bald are gonna lay via Tete Katschke. Let me fly, let me fly, let me fly a big. Quick, 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 quick. Ich bin verfallen, it ain't no use. Der Butcher, ich verkauf mir einmal Kuckuck. I got to be brave for real balabatish. Goodbye, little chickens, don't forget to say Kaddish. I can go where the wild goose goes, cause I must go where the shechet goes. I'll be up gizalts, I'll be in a top. I'm a calf'n butcher, all I'm stinking from cob.
When's the last time you heard that, the cry of the wild goose? Wasn't that originally Frankie Lane? Well, this is a version that I bet you've never heard before in your life. Old friend of the family when we lived in Cleveland, Mickey Katz and the Kosher Jammers. Well, this is March the 18th. March the 18th is a significant date in American history. It was on March the 18th, 1886, that 500 students, no, pardon me, all of the students of St. Anne's Parochial School in Brooklyn were being charged a 10-cent fee to walk in the door in the morning, a surcharge, walked out and went on strike. It was the first student strike in the history of the United States, and they thereby established a pattern, established a trend, which has flowed down to us, lo and these the waning days of Babylon. I read again in my chronicle that 500 students, there they are, from two Alameda high schools, Alameda, California, have went out on strike. They got up and walked out, held a big rally for what? In support of raising teachers' salaries, you see. I think that kind of solidarity, and of course, that those students doing that, that's a lesson they're going to carry with them into the workplace. They're going to carry with them into the future, you see. God, I remember a while back, it was a boy in Arkansas came to school with green hair, and the principal sent him home. It was St. Patrick's Day. That's what he came with green hair, just as a goof. And the principal sent him home and said, we are training children for the workplace, and employers do not want people with green hair. Well, every time I hear a discussion of education these days, it's education is a trade school. They talk about schools as trade schools, not education. It's, you can school a horse, but you can't educate it. Now get that straight. God, if they do want to talk about them as trade schools, then teach them something that has to do with trade, some labor history, some how to go about collective bargaining. At least teach them the right that they have the right to collective bargaining and to form labor unions. Give them some real tools when they get out in the workplace to control the condition of their labor. Well, this is a very good time to listen to John McCutcheon's Kids on Strike, and I'm going to follow that up, well, with a voice. If you don't know who this voice is, shame on you.
Dime, though we've got important jobs to do, working overtime. No one could ever be a parent if we didn't do the work we children do. But it really isn't fair. We only want our share. The situation is a crime. That's why we kids are out on strike. That's why we've organized. Brave and bold, knowing exactly what it is that we should do. We had the best teachers anyone could ever have. Yes, we learned it all from you. Little sister staging a sit down, it's the best she could do, cause she can barely crawl. Out in front we got some signs and a tiny picket line, and Mike and Charlie put some posters on the wall. Yes, we kids are out on strike. Yes, we've organized, and we won't go back to ever being kids again until we're recognized.
Speaking for our generation, we think it wise you consider our demands. You're only in control for just a little while, then you leave things in our hands. So give us a head start at doing well. Take good care of all your parents gave to you. Every little thing you do one day comes back to you. Even a child could understand. That's why we kids are out on strike. That's why we've organized. And we won't go back to ever being kids again until we're recognized. That's why we kids are out on strike. That's why we've organized. And we won't go back to ever being kids again until we're recognized.
Higher wages, let me tell you what to do. You got to talk to the seamen on the ship with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, don't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the country. Of course, it ain't quite this simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be waiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then, boys. Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. He speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. You can pass out a leaflet and call a meeting, talk it over, speak your mind, decide to do something about it. Of course, the boss may persuade some poor damn fool to go to your meeting and act like a stool, but you can always tell a stool, though, that's a fact. He's got a yellow streak running down his back. He doesn't have to stool, you know. He'll always make a good living on what he takes out of blind men's cups. Well, you got a union now. You're sitting pretty. Put some of the boys on the steering committee. The boss won't listen if one guy squawks, but he's got to listen if the union talks. He'd better. He'd be mighty lonely one of these days. Suppose they're working you so hard it's just outrageous, paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss and the boss would yell, "Before I raise your pay, I'd see you all in hell." Well, he's puffing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, thinks he's got your union lick. He looks out the window and what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard. Unfair! Slave driver. Bet he beats his own wife. Now, boys, you come to the hardest time. The boss will try to bust your picket line. He may call out the police, the National Guard, tell you it's a crime to have a union card. They may raid your meeting, hit you on the head, call every one of you a goddamn red, young patriotic. Moscow agents trying to steal a A-bomb. But down in Frisco, here's what they found. Down in the Gulf, here's what they found. On the Great Lakes, here's what they found. And along the East Coast, here's what they found. That if you don't let red baiting break you up, and if you don't let stool pigeons break you up, if you don't let vigilantes break you up, and if you don't let race hatred break you up, you'll win. What I mean, take it easy, but take it.
Pete Seeger, right? Okay, you get the refrigerator. I was in a junk store a couple of weeks ago, and there was a big box full of little blue books. Well, they were little blue books, and they were called little blue books. From almost 100 years ago, that was E. Haldeman Julius, who realized that working people were interested in literature, they were interested in art, they were interested in philosophy and debate. So he made these little blue books that would fit in your back pocket. And those books were all over the minefields, you know, all over the, in the hard rock mines, they were all over the forest, wherever factory workers were, they had the little blue books. One of the people who wrote in the little blue books was Robert Ingersoll. And his work was under discussion by working people all over the country at one time, like I say, near 100 years ago. I want to give you a sermon, as it's Sunday here, that comes right out of Ingersoll. This is a good part of what those working people were discussing. And then we're going to listen to Fred Holstein sing a Bob Franke song. Robert Ingersoll. When I became convinced that the universe is natural, that all the ghosts and gods are myths, there entered into my brain, into my soul, into every drop of my blood, the sense, the feeling, the joy of freedom. The walls of my prison crumbled and fell. The dungeon was flooded with light, and all the bolts and bars and manacles became dust. I was no longer a servant, a serf, a slave. There was for me no master in all the world, not even in infinite space. I was free, free to think, to express my thoughts, free to use all my faculties, all my senses, free to spread imagination's wings, free to investigate, to guess and dream and hope, free to judge and determine for myself, free to reject all ignorant and cruel creeds, all the inspired books that savages have produced, and all the barbarous legends of the past, free from popes and priests, free from all the called and set apart, free from sanctified mistakes and holy lies, free from the fear of eternal pain, free from the winged monsters of the night, free from devils, ghosts, and gods. For the first time, I was free. There were no prohibited places in all the realm of thought, no air, no space, where fancy could not spread her painted wings, no chains for my limbs, no lashes for my back, no fires for my flesh, no master's frown or threat, no following in others' footsteps, no need to bow or cringe or crawl or utter lying words. I was free. I stood erect and fearlessly, joyously faced all worlds.
It's so easy to dream of the days gone by. It's so hard to think of the times to come. It's to accept every moment as a gift, is a gift that is given to some. What can you do? Your days, but work and hope. Let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life? But love till you've loved it away. Love till you've loved it away. There's sorrow enough for the whole world's end. There are no guarantees but a grave. And the lives that we live and the time that we spend is a treasure too precious to say. What can you do with your days but work and hope? Let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life? You loved it away. days, but work and hope. Let your dreams bind your work to your play. What can you do with each moment of your life but love till you've loved it away? Love till you've loved it away.
Well, the great Fred Holstein. Well, now look, we're pressed for time. I have put you through a whole lot this time, during this hour of this Loafer's Glory. I want you to get up off your butts, gather your kids together, and dance around your kitchen, dance around your radio. This is your time to cut loose and to dance. I want you to ape walk. I want you to truck. I want you to strut. Cast your bodies about. And we'll listen to Sunny Side Up, Chick Indoor.
There's one thing to think of when you're blue. There are others much worse off than you. If a load of trouble should arise, laugh and say it's great to be alive. And keep your sunny side up, up, hide the side that gets blue. If you have 9 sons in a row, baseball teams make money, you know. Keep your funny side up, up. Let your laughter come through. Do stand up on your legs, be like 2 fried eggs. Keep your sunny side up. Pleasure or a pain, good or bad, successful or in vain, happiness is just a point of view. If you have it, here's the thing to do. Keep your sunny side up, up, round a frown with a smile. If you think it's raining for you, just remember others are blue. Always look for the bright side. Start the day on the right side. You'll find life worthwhile. Learn to wear a smile. Keep your sunny side up.
This has been Utah Phillips, and you have been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. From Tennyson's Ulysses, we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are. We are one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.